with the 21st pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Green Bay Packers select Taha Clinton-Dix.
It's time for the Packers War Room Podcast.
Made me a believer into really thinking that the Packers really could run the table, and that was when I said right away, they're winning the NFC North.
The bond between us was just a moment that I'll never forget. For him to be able to get behind the corner and really just catch the prayer, essentially, was just quintessential Packers 2016.
Like I said, for this team to win two playoff games was just astounding with how beat up they were and the state of their defense, really.
And now, alongside Jacob Westendorf and Cody Bauer, here's your host of the Packers War Room Podcast, Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Packers War Room Offseason Podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum of Cheesehead TV, and joining me tonight, as always, is, I believe, recently re-employed in the Packers blogging world, Jacob Westendorf. Jake, how's it going?
That's correct. Re-employed. I've actually signed I don't know if a free agent could sign a deal with two different teams, but I have. I'm doing some stuff with PackerNet and also with FanSided. So FanSided will start here pretty quickly. But glad to be here. Glad to be talking offensive line. This was actually my position for the Cheesehead TV draft guide, so that's always exciting when you get to your spot in that guide. So happy to be here and chat with you guys a little bit.
Certainly, and also with us is Cheesehead TV draft guide contributor, Cody Bauer. Cody, how's it going?
Going great. Looking forward to talk some offensive line, some big uglies with you guys. A position that I think the Packers will want to address more than often have usually addressed in just about every draft under Thompson. Of course, with Gutekunst, don't really know, but judging by the depth of how the offensive line looks, I'd say it's a good bet the Packers could be looking for at least one.
Yeah, it was long a Thompson thing to take at least one in every draft and always try and take one offensive lineman and one defensive lineman and just get as many talented big people as he could on the team. Certainly something a guy like Gutekunst has been with Thompson as long as he has, probably thinking about probably a priority. Not a whole lot of news. We, I believe, recorded on Sunday night, and there hasn't been what you would call significant developments in the Packers offseason as far as free agent signings are concerned. Tremont Williams has been the latest bit of news, and there hasn't really been much else going on. Except this week, or I guess today specifically, has been the meetings, the winter meetings or the owners' meetings, whatever you want to call them, and a lot of interviews, a lot of high-profile interviews. Certainly Mike McCarthy was interviewed, Brian Gutekunst was interviewed. A number of topics for discussion came up. McCarthy talked specifically about needing to add cornerbacks in general. Also talked specifically about needing pass rush to be a point of emphasis in the draft. Maybe not necessarily a point of emphasis in free agency. It seems like he left that a little bit more open for cornerback. But McCarthy really seems to think that edge rush needs to be kind of at the top of the priority list for the draft. And then Brian Gutekunst was interviewed as well. Once again, just raved about the secondary class, and I'm starting to think more and more that Green Bay is going to lean towards an edge rusher in round one. I did a little study about average round score and where the good players come from, and you need to get edge rushers early and often, as Justice Mosqueda has talked about in the past and as a lot of people have talked about. But there are a lot of later round defensive backs that work out, so you might see Green Bay attack that in rounds 2 and 4, rounds 3 and 4, kind of push that list on down the line after making a couple of free agent additions. Another way that they would be able to kind of pull that off is if Kentrell Bryce makes a big step up, and that was one of the big takeaways from what McCarthy said in interviews and what was sort of written about coming out of the big meetings this week, was that Bryce was probably going to be able to compete for that open second safety job as far as really truly being off the ball and detached from the front seven, whereas the hybrid spot is going to be taken over by Josh Jones. There's not a lot of debate there, but they do like Bryce operating in space. Nobody will forget that hit that he put on Cole Beasley, and hopefully Bryce can kind of move on from his poor sophomore season and look more like he did as a rookie. Any takeaways, Cody, from the meetings and some of the interviews that you read or watched?
Nothing too major. You touched on most of the highlights. It is interesting that McCarthy does keep making sure he mentions how the defense needs to get better players. I mean, that's the theme all offseason, essentially, is making sure that defense is taken care of. And as far as him expecting or playing on Kendrell Bryce competing for a spot, that's good. You always want competition. I joked about it when I think Hugh Jackson came out and said Tyrod Taylor's a starting quarterback. Like, Hugh Jackson, easy over there in Cleveland. How about you have a competition? Let the best man win it out. You don't anoint somebody and hand them. You make them earn it. And, you know, that's what you want to hear. You want to hear that Bryce is going to be, you know, in the competition to start, and may the best person win for the job. So, and overall, as far as Gutekunst talking about corners, I love the top end of this class. There's about seven guys I would feel confident or comfortable drafting in the first two rounds and plug and play. You know, obviously have the growing pains. They're not going to be studs or anything, but, you know, that's good for the top of the class. As far as the middle to late rounds, I don't love it as much as I think others do, especially when you kind of narrow down the guys the Packers tend to draft with thresholds and heights and speed and all that kind of thing. The list does narrow a little bit. So, but overall, the message is much the same. Improve the defense. Get better on that side of the ball.
Jacob, your thoughts on the meetings?
I mean, I think the thing I took away from Mike McCarthy is everybody is almost penciling in a cornerback in the first round. I mean, granted, mock drafts are mock drafts, and, you know, we all do them, and it's all just kind of educated guesswork. But, you know, McCarthy was sure to remind people that pass rusher is something that they need to fix on as well. He mentioned the depth, which I assume he at least means lack thereof. I would say they need to add one or two more talented rushers in there. And that would be something that they would probably have to address in the first round. They keep talking about, like you said, how much they like the secondary class, and that would mean that I think that they're leaning that direction in the first round. Because if you really think about it, even if the edge rush class, let's just assume that you don't have to get them early, like is pretty much suggested by evidence, then you have this year's class, which isn't as strong or as deep as it was in years past. I mean, really, after Bradley Chubb and Harold Landry, there isn't a consensus third guy. And that's interesting because it's not like there isn't a consensus third guy because of how much talent there is at that position. It's because we're kind of unsure about everything else. Some people really, really like Marcus Davenport. Some people don't. Some people really like Arden Key. Some people don't. There's plenty of guys down that list. I think the biggest thing is, I've been talking about this probably since the middle of January, is that the most important position in a 3-4 defense, which is what the Packers have been running, is the outside linebacker spot. And they have made two significant additions to that since 2012. They took Nick Perry in the first round in 2012, and they signed Julius Peppers 2 years later. That's 4 years now that they've gone without making a significant addition to the most important position group on the team. So I think McCarthy finally sees that. I think he knows that. Something else that I took away was that they kept talking about improving the communication within the football operations. You know, Ted Thompson was he didn't want to talk to anybody. I mean, that's just kind of how he was. It wasn't he was trying to keep people in the dark on things. It was just he didn't like to talk to people. And you could see that McCarthy and Gutekunst are saying kind of the same things. They like the secondary class. We need more corners, those kinds of things. I think you could see an improvement in the communication throughout the football operations. Now, whether or not that translates to a better product on the field, I guess, remains to be seen. But it's encouraging, I think, that the general manager and the head coach at least appear to be on the same page. And for all that talk, when it happened about Mark Murphy talking about revamping the way that they have done things over the years where they all report directly to him. He has said several times he doesn't meddle in football operations. He just oversees them. That's a good thing for now. Obviously, there's still some concern that he could overrule something, or, you know, there's ways for this structure to fail. But so far, so good, at least on that front of things. And the communication's improved. So I think that that's a positive thing going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, all the changes that have been made really, in my opinion, pale in comparison to the Mike Pettine hire. I just don't think that's getting enough credit, and I think we'll see it. I mean, this is, in my opinion, you went from one of the worst five coordinators on the defensive side of the ball, not like Dom Capers as a whole, as the breadth of what his career was, but by the time 2017 came around, just how badly the game had passed him by. To now, I think, you know, Rex Ryan says he's the best coordinator in the league. Mike Daniels basically can't even stop giggling. He's so damn excited to play for Mike Pettine. But I think you've gotten yourself into a situation now where you have one of the best five coordinators in football. And that's just a huge jump, regardless of personnel. And that's really, you know, what I'm most excited about coming out of this entire offseason. Personnel, whatever, draft, whatever. I'm all about the Pettine Zoo, and it's something that'll either bear itself out or it won't. Speaking of something that probably won't bear itself out, Odell Beckham is somebody that's been talked about as a player that is available. And this being a Packers podcast, I would assume that basically the other 31 fan bases are kicking the idea around. He is, in our opinion, we talked about this a little bit in the pre-production meeting, he is one of the best three wide receivers in football, probably one of the best 15 to 20 players in football, and somebody that you just don't really get a chance to acquire. But if you read some of the Twitter sphere, whether it's attitude issues, salary issues, compensation issues, there are some Packer fans who have just absolutely no interest in bringing in Beckham. And so what I'd like to talk about, and I'll actually kick this one off, is just what would be your maximum, you know, kind of compensation for bringing in Beckham, how you would use him, and then kind of where you'd need to be and how you would handle the salary constraints. I think he wants to be the number one paid wide receiver in the league. Right now, that's Antonio Brown at $17 million. I don't think Odell would commit to $17.5. I think you probably would have to go, you know, to a full 4 years, $18 million a year deal. And that doesn't bother me. I wouldn't have an issue with that. You end up, you know, spending $32 million between he and Devontae, or $32.5 million between he and Devontae in annual average value, and then you just do nothing else with the receiver room besides rookie contracts and, you know, kind of street free agent level guys that get cut from their team and want to chase a ring with Odell and Devontae, et cetera, how do you accomplish that? Well, of course, you do cut Randall Cobb. If you have a chance to acquire Odell Beckham and upgrade, you know, that spot, you do release Randall Cobb. That would be the next part of the plan. And, yeah, like I said, you'd be able to manage the salary. Cutting Cobb would save you about $10 million. Spending $18 on Beckham means, you know, $8 million, and that is well within their current salary cap. They could backload the contract when they have $60 million in space next year, $100 million in space the year after that. As far as compensation, you know, I would send a 1 and a 4. They have 2 4s. I would send one of the 4s and number 14 for Beckham, and it wouldn't keep me up at night at all. Take Nwosu or Okoronkwo or Key at the top of the second round, and then just take three corners. I mean, one of them's going to hit, or you sign Delvin Bro and you just, you know, push your defensive personnel needs into 2019, and you attack at that draft and that offseason when you have space. You ask Mike Pettine to kind of cobble together what you currently have personnel-wise, and Rodgers, Adams, Beckham, and Graham score 38 a game. That would be my plan. Cody, what's your thoughts on the Beckham deal as far as what would you give up for him? Where would you be comfortable salary-wise? Kind of basically everything that I just talked about.
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't have too much disagreement, which obviously doesn't make for great listening, but
sure.
I would probably go as high up as 5 years. And I'm sure there's just something about him that would strike me as at him wanting to be the first $20 million a year wide receiver. So, I mean, if you could work the numbers to somehow alleviate some of the cap hit, or like you said, extend it, backload it to make it work, you know, have to cut Cobb, no problem. I wouldn't have an issue if you're able to get five for 20 for him. And, yeah, Cody, that's a lot of money. That's quarterback-type money. I totally understand. Again, we're talking about one of the best three wide receivers in the NFL. Chance to acquire them is basically never. So, I would have no problem giving up first and the third. You said first and fourth. First and third is no issues for me. That's totally fair compensation. Good luck, New York Giants. I don't know exactly what the heck you got going on over there, but you just keep doing you, and we'll keep fantasizing here in Packerland about having Davante Adams and Odell Beckham line up on either side and wishing the defense luck with Aaron Rodgers throwing it. Jesus, that just is so exciting to think about it. And there's not even a rumor out there, but yeah, it's part of being a fan and having fun with it.
Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, what the hell? You know, I mean, with all due respect to Jordy Nelson, we talked about it. He's been the best receiver that we've seen in recent memory. And we said that in our tribute to him, but Odell Beckham is a much better player. And that's no disrespect to Nelson. That's just a respect out of Beckham's talent. The concern that you would have is he's your classic, you know, diva wide receiver, but those guys I think can be managed. That's almost when, you know, you got to trust that your quarterback, who's a veteran, obviously, and your head coach, they've won a Super Bowl ring before, they would be willing to keep him in line. As for compensation, you're talking about, Cody, you said it, he's one of the three best receivers in the NFL. There's a legitimate argument that he's the best receiver in the NFL. At least I wouldn't look at you too crazy if you said that that was the case. The only time you get a chance to acquire a player like that is if you draft him. Those guys just don't hit the free agent market. I don't fully understand why the Giants are trying to move their best player at a time when their current starting quarterback has never been that great, and he's not good now, and they could be looking at a rookie quarterback. Taking away that rookie's best receiver probably isn't that smart. But if I were the Packers, I mean, yeah, I'd do a one and a four, the first pick in the fourth round, or if they were insistent on a third round at pick 76, I'd give them 14 and 76 and cut your losses. You know, like you said, Ross, take Mike Patton and tell him to make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, and hope for the best on defense. And then, yeah, Rodgers and Davante Adams and Odell Beckham and Jimmy Graham, and then you throw in guys like Montgomery and Aaron Jones, and I mean, that's a lethal offense. And I know that 2011 had so many guys, and that was what made that offense so special as a receiving core. But I mean, you're talking about one of the three best receivers in Odell Beckham, and then you're talking about one of the 12-ish best receivers in Davante Adams. That is an incredible offense. And like I said, Beckham is the best weapon that Rodgers or maybe the Packers even have ever had since Sterling Sharp. I don't think that there's any question. I don't understand the easy dismissal of it. You know, I think it's kind of funny that you get these people that say the Packers need to go all in and help Aaron Rodgers and get him back to another Super Bowl, and then you get a chance to make a all-in kind of move like Odell Beckham, and then it's like, oh, I got no interest in that. Like, I just don't understand that. I know he has perceived attitude issues and stuff like that, and some of it's real. I mean, I don't doubt that some of it's real because, I mean, the guy put a freaking hole in the wall at Lambeau Field. It's obvious right there. But I don't think that that's worth not just simply dismissing the fact that he's one of the, right, what, 20 best players in the NFL. You have to at least make that call to get that guy. And like I said, yeah, one and a four, one and a three, and I'd pay him anywhere from $18 to $19 million a year and trust Russ Ball to do his job. So I don't think there's any question that that's something, if the offer were presented that way to the Packers, they should be looking into it.
I agree. And moving on to our next point, what really is the point of having a podcast if you can't settle individual internet grudges? I think that's a great narrow casting idea for what we're trying to accomplish here. So I guess you would call it maybe a rival Packers blog took one of my tweets and put it at the top of an article. And that tweet was something that the three of us agreed on, something that we kind of giggled about, talked about. It was mostly a joke. And it was just me pointing out the fact that Packers fans wanted everybody gone from the defense, wanted the coordinator fired, wanted a completely different show on the defensive side of the ball. And then when Demaryius Randall and Morgan Burnett were removed from the defensive picture, we're freaking out, and I made a little bit of fun of that. This guy wrote an article basically about how I was wrong and how the defense is worse off than it was, why Tremont Williams and Muhammad Wilkerson were basically acquired because they knew Pettine or knew Packers football, whatever, and that they were making the wrong moves. They were taking away guys that were the saviors of the defense last year and were the reason that it wasn't the worst defense in football instead of just a bad one. Individual axes to grind aside, Jacob, right now, swapping Capers for Pettine, swapping Demaryius Randall, I guess, then for Tremont Williams, and then moving from Dean Lowry, I guess, to Mo Wilkerson, while having to replace Morgan Burnett with Josh Jones. Where do you feel like, without the draft, without signing another player whatsoever, where do you feel like Green Bay's at as opposed to where they were a season ago defensively?
Well, something else that you didn't mention was that Devon House has been swapped out for what we hope is a healthy Kevin King. I think that will help as well. Tremont Williams is a veteran player that knows Mike Pettine's system, and he can still play. Something else that I think that you can say about this year's defense that you probably couldn't about last year's is they have a legitimate strength, and that strength is Mike Daniels, Kenny Clark, and Mo Wilkerson. Now, Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, that's a strength, but not a overwhelming strength to the point that those three guys are if Wilkerson can find his old form. And then you add in, there's so many things that are just going to be different because Dom Capers isn't here. And I don't mean to, piss on a guy's grave or whatever way it is you want to look at it, but Ross, you mentioned it earlier, it's very clear that the Packers had a defense that was archaic and the game had passed Dom Capers by. And I can't even tell you how many times that you're just looking at the defense and they're pointing at each other, looking at each other, and they don't even know what the hell's going on. Mike Pettine alone will make this defense better pre-snap. That alone, in my opinion, makes them a better defense than what they were a season ago. I respect Morgan Burnett. I think he was a good player during his time in Green Bay, but he didn't make any big plays. He was hurt a little bit, it seemed like, every single year. He played 12 games last year, and he played in a couple games hurt as well. Josh Jones, we kind of got an exposure to him in Morgan Burnett's spot last season because of that. And then you add in, Demaryius Randall is the guy who, I think it's funny that, coming into last season, everybody couldn't wait for that guy to be off the team. And now all of a sudden he's our number one corner, and how could you afford to let that guy get away when the reality is it's very simple, guys. The Packers couldn't get along with him long term. Demaryius Randall didn't show much interest in getting along with the Packers coaching staff. He called him out publicly in the media, and then Mike McCarthy basically said, this guy needs to clean his own house, and he was never coming back. I'm not saying he was an addition by subtraction because he is a talented player, but the reality is when he wasn't intercepting passes, he was kind of an average to below average cover corner, and the Packers did admit that he was playing out of position, and that's a failure and another story for a different day. But I do think at this point, the coaching change alone, I'm not saying that's going to make the Packers a top five defense in the NFL. I don't think I'm delirious enough to think that. But being better prepared, making things more simple, and then adding a legitimate strength like Muhammad Wilkerson to that front three, I think that puts the Packers in a better position today than they were in on, what, January 1st or whatever it was when the season ended. So, yeah, I do think they're better. And there's more to add between now and the end of the draft.
This, you know, I'm not – I try my absolute best not to be a generator of hot takes, but I've got a hot take for you.
Oh, boy.
From an actual impact perspective on a single game, I will put Josh Jones's performance against the Cincinnati Bengals up against any game from Morgan Burnett's career. Not consistent, solid play, assignment, sure, blah, blah, blah. I am talking about actually making an impact on the outcome of the game, making plays.
He was the best player on the field that day.
I think, go back and watch that Cincinnati game with Josh Jones. That's a bad man, and that is badder than Morgan Burnett has ever been. And I like Morgan Burnett. I would have absolutely, absolutely signed him to the contract that he signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I think they have something in Josh Jones. His athletic traits are off the charts. And if Mike Pettin can teach him how to play football, that's going to be something else. Cody, what are your thoughts on this issue?
Well, we covered most of it already, but, you know, if we talked about it even, I think, in a previous podcast, Josh Jones was taken to replace Morgan Burnett, so they already have that understanding going in. We talked about everyone else to replace everybody. It isn't going to improve. You only have pretty much one way to go from how the defense played last year, and, you know, it's been mentioned, it's Mike Pettin primarily that's going to be the biggest difference maker. Never mind Muhammad Wilkerson or Jamal Williams or whoever else they may draft early, it's going to be Pettin. And everything about how the defense is going to perform is all going to come down to his shoulders. And I absolutely think they're better today than they were before, just purely because Capers is no longer calling the defense. So simple enough for me.
Yeah, I have a second hot take.
Oh, God.
Muhammad Wilkerson has the potential at 28 years old in his athletic prime to be the best player, the best defensive player in the NFC North.
Wow.
The potential.
That's a hotter take than the one you had about Josh Jones.
I know it.
I mean, Darius Slay is one of the top five corners, probably.
Everson Griffin's pretty good.
Yeah. Harrison Smith's a damn good safety.
At the peak of his powers, Mo Wilkerson was unquestionably the second best defensive lineman.
Not J.J. Watt, though. That's a fair point. I mean, yeah, it's not ridiculous.
At the peak of his powers, Mo Wilkerson was number two to J.J. Watt. Your athletic prime is between age 26 and 29. That's a scientific fact. I'm just saying, and I've literally already admitted that it was a hot take.
Yeah, no, I mean it's hot, but it's not unrealistic, I guess. I mean it's foreseeable.
Well, and the fact that you prefaced it by he had the potential to be there. Well, yeah, he does because we've seen it before. You're right; he definitely could be there.
Anyway,
and he's playing for a contract, so that's always a good motivator.
Playing for a contract, playing for a defensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator that brought that performance out of him. You sure as shit can't complain about the other guys taking up blockers, you know, to keep him free. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. And I think without question the best defensive player in the NFC North is Harrison Smith. You talk about Darius Slay, and that's fine. But I mean, I'm not going to go there with you. Anyway, that's my super hot take. Mo Wilkerson, potential to be the best defensive, individual defensive player in the division.
There you go, folks. Write it down.
But it's a hot take, and I get that it's a hot take, and that's fine. Let's dive into the draft. We're about halfway through this madness, this episode 3 of the Packers War Room Offseason Podcast. We talk a little bit of offensive line. I think in a perfect world, all things considered, you're in pretty good shape. You feel good about your left tackle, David Bakhtiari, probably the best left tackle in football. You feel pretty good about Brian Bulaga. Generally, some ranks in between the best 6 to 12, just the top half of the league at right tackle. You have a above league average center and above league average left guard. And right guard, you've got, you know, Justin McCray, who I think is a replacement level guy, which is not ideal, but if it's one spot on your line, it's fine. Kyle Murphy, I think, can be above average right guard. Jari Evans was an above average right guard. You can bring him back for almost no money. In a perfect world, you're sitting pretty good. It's not a perfect world. Jason Spriggs is a second-round pick. He's not been great. He ended the season on IR. Kyle Murphy ended the season on IR. Brian Bulaga ended the season on IR. This is a very beat-up unit that is going, and a lot of them are going through the rehab process. Let's talk about offensive tackle first. Jacob, where do you think Green Bay needs to start paying attention to offensive tackle? Keep him in mind, obviously, they still have a second-round pick on a rookie contract. They still have two starters that they like that make plenty of money. And whether you feel like Kyle Murphy's a tackle or a guard certainly weighs into the decision as well.
Well, I mentioned that I thought one part of Ted Thompson's new role was Goody looking to him in the second round and asking him which receiver. I think another part of his role is Goody looking to him in the fourth round and saying, okay, which offensive lineman, whether that means to kick him inside the guard or having a guard that can play tackle. So I'm thinking if you get value that smacks you in the face in the third round at pick 76, then you could certainly take one there. I don't think you need to take one in the first two rounds, because if you're taking one in the first two rounds, that means that you want that guy to start almost immediately. I mean, you think about it. They took Brian Bulaga with the intention of having him sit for a year behind Mark Tauscher. Bulaga got pressed into duty, and that was probably better for the team anyways. Derek Sherrod was another example of what they tried to do with that. But if you pick a first-round offensive tackle, he should be your starter. If you pick a second-round offensive tackle, you're hoping that he can start. They have a second-round pick on a rookie contract, like you mentioned. I'm not ready to give up on Jason Spriggs, but at the same time, I'm also not ready to rely on him, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah. So it's not like they need to say, okay, that's your swing tackle. So I think they can pick a guy in the fourth round. Maybe that's the Vince Beagle pick, the first pick of the fourth round this year. Maybe that's that pick. But I think that's when you start looking. Unless you really get value in the third round, I think you could start looking in the fourth round. Ask Ted, which one? Because usually it works out pretty well in the fourth round. If you don't believe me, ask Josh Sitton, ask TJ Lang, ask a bunch of guys. David Bakhtiari. There's a bunch of guys that he picked in the fourth round that have turned out pretty damn good.
Cody, your thoughts on the need at tackle?
Sentiments are the same. Day three, primarily. Again, it would have to be incredible value of one of those top guys dropping to even consider pulling the trigger. I don't think at 14 you can pull the trigger. Day three, and you made a great point about Thompson just being on the money with those picks a lot of the time. So usually look for your college left tackle, possibly they can convert inside. A good athlete, usually more athletic than potentially, than strong necessarily. I wouldn't have to worry, but I wouldn't worry about the position if I was Goody Clemson until day three easily.
Yeah, and I'll just echo those sentiments. I think Bulaga's probably going to be fine. It's too early to give up on Jason Spriggs. If it doesn't work out this year, I think it's fine, because then you just release him. But it's too early to give up on a guy with his athletic profile, certainly. And, beyond that, you've got Kyle Murphy, I think, can be an average NFL right tackle and an above-average guard. I don't think people quite understand just how much value being an average right tackle in the NFL holds, considering how just god-awful some starting NFL offensive linemen are. And, we talk about my piece at Cheesehead TV this week about average round score. Tied for last was offensive tackle. Just straight up, teams have a really hard time identifying skilled offensive tackles, or in general, just identifying guys that are going to translate to the league. You look at a guy like David Bakhtiari, best left tackle in football, fourth round pick. Damar Dotson, undrafted. Charles Leno Jr., seventh round. It is very difficult to scout these big guys, and for right now, David Bakhtiari is in one spot, and one of Kyle Murphy, Jason Spriggs, or Brian Bulaga will work out for the other spot. if you want to bring somebody in to develop him somewhere in the third or fourth round, I'm not gonna bother you one way or the other. But there is one guy, and we'll talk about him when we get kind of towards our favorite guys at the position. That if they did take him after a trade down or with their second round pick, I would be actually pretty excited because I just think that much of him as a player. Top guy in this class for me is Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame. I am not overly obsessed with this class. I don't think it's a great group of tackles. Usually when you have a great group of tackles, you'll see three or four of them mentioned as possible top 10 picks, and you just don't see that. I don't see that in this class, and I don't see the depth in this class that I would like, and so I'm pretty happy you know, that you're seeing hopefully third-year jumps from Spriggs and Murphy as opposed to, boy, we've got to go out and get ourselves one of these tackles. Jacob, who's your top tackle in this class?
Mike McGlinchey as well. I'm with you. I don't think it's a very good class of tackles. There's nobody at the top either. I mean, if you think about it, if we sat down and we're doing a mock draft right now, I mean, I don't even know when the first tackle gets taken. I mean, it's certainly possible, I guess, that one gets taken earlier. But, you know, the best offensive lineman in this class is a guard. There's some talk about letting Quentin Nelson even eventually play tackle. So it's not a very good class. McGlinchey's the best of the bunch, the cream of the crop, whatever way that you want to put it out there. There's some guys, I think, later, there could be some nice projects, but there are no – Laramie Tunsil and Ronnie Stanley were fantastic prospects a couple years ago. Tunsil only fell because of a weird picture that came out during the draft, and then Ronnie Stanley's been rock solid and was a really good prospect coming out. McGlinchey, not on that level. Connor Williams is another one that probably gets some debate toward the top, but again, I'm not too enamored with him either. So McGlinchey's the guy, but I don't know how much that is that's saying.
Cody, your top tackle in this class?
I do have Connor Williams as my top guy, and I will admit I did like his tape in 2016 prior to this year before he kind of struggled the first game, and then he fell victim to a knee injury and just didn't really look the part. And there's some smarter guys than me, Lance Erline, who thinks that Connor Williams may eventually have to move to guard at the NFL level. I don't think he has to. I think you try him at tackle and – not just try him. I think once he's healthy and gets his confidence back, I think he'll be, you know, one of the top-tier guys, very technical, decent feet, good hands. I like what he does on the field. I do have McGlinchey as my number two guy, though, so it's not a huge disparity between the two, but I like Connor Williams just a bit more.
So we'll move on to our favorite guys, and that is my favorite guy in this draft, offensive line period, Connor Williams. I think he's being undervalued. I love this 2016 tape. That's a theme you'll get from me, though, to be honest, this season. There are a lot of guys that struggled in 2017 due to injury, due to circumstances, due to whatever, that I think have ceilings that profile higher than guys that would technically or whatever be selected above them just because of, you know, better 2017 film. And of course you want, you know, the most recent thing you see to be good when you're scouting, but you also want to keep in mind what is the absolute best case scenario for this player. And when I watched Connor Williams and when I thought about him as a potential guy for this class prior to his knee injury after the first game, I saw a surefire top 10 pick. I saw a guy that could be an average left tackle, an above average right tackle, and an absolutely an elite guard. And I think that Green Bay could select him at 22, 23. If they move down, somebody moves up to take Lamar Jackson, somebody moves up to take Mason Rudolph. You take Connor Williams and you're set at right guard. If you want to be set at right guard, you're set at right tackle. If you want to be set at right tackle, I just have that high of an opinion on Connor Williams. Everybody else would be angry, but I just wouldn't. It wouldn't bug me. It wouldn't bother me at all. And I really, really like Connor Williams. Jacob, you did this for Cheesehead TV, so you, I would almost guarantee, have watched more offensive line, specifically more tackle film than I have. who is your guy at tackle that you seem to be talking more and more about than anybody else?
Well, I actually did the interior, so guard and center. But there is one guy who played tackle, actually, that profiles a little bit better as guard, but I think he can be an average to above-average right tackle. That's Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia. Really, really good, aggressive run blocker. He's a guy that the old school fans would fall in love with right away because he'll take somebody and just kind of throw them on the ground really quickly. I think he has good enough footwork to play right tackle. Sometimes he gets himself tangled up a little bit, and he's not quite as athletic as you'd like for a tackle spot, which makes him a better prospect at guard. But I do like Wynn. I think that, like I mentioned, he can't play left tackle. So you certainly don't want that, but he can play either of the guard spots. He did a little bit of center stuff at Georgia, so that's useful too. That makes him a good fit for the Packers. They like to cross train their offensive linemen, obviously. And yeah, I think he could be a pretty good right tackle. You could have him kind of like what you mentioned there with Connor Williams. You can pick him in the third or the fourth round though, and you'll be good at right tackle as an insurance policy behind Bulaga if you want to be, or he could probably start at right guard tomorrow. I don't know if he's quite plug and play, but it's very possible that that's what ends up happening. So I like Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of steam. You might want to reevaluate where you think he's going. He's getting a ton of steam. Cody, who is your top tackle, or not your top tackle, but the one that you watch, the one that you seem to be higher on than the rest of the draft community?
Sure. Well, one of the guys that also had some serious steam for a while, and I think he still does, and he particularly will in NFL circles, is Austin Corbett from Nevada. Much like Isaiah Wynn, who played left tackle, so did Corbett, and filled in for Joel Bitonio. And that's what many project the kind of path he takes is going to be a move inside to guard. You see a lot of what his strengths are as far as pushing people in the run game and kind of in tight quarters. It's going to be a better transition for him to move inside. But I think in a pinch, you could probably kick him to outside. But definitely the projection is that he kicks inside right away and starts pretty early. And I wanted to reiterate, I think that Isaiah Wynn, there's some serious talk about him even sneaking in the back end around one. He was a great tackle at Georgia. It's just he was 6'2", and they just you don't have 6'2" tackles in the NFL. So both those guys, though, that was a good pick, though, Jacob. He is a damn good football player.
Yeah, Isaiah Wynn is getting like Vikings at 30 discussion.
That's crazy.
I heard the Cowboys at 19 or something.
Yeah. I guess I have read that a little bit, but I guess I didn't put a ton of stock into it. So okay, I mean. Knowing that, I'll have to go back and rewatch. But, I mean, even then, am I very upset? I mean, I'm not too happy if they pick him at 45, but I'm not throwing stuff through the wall either.
Accurate, yeah. And that's kind of like what we were talking about. Maybe day three is probably when you look at it, but you get a good football player, you get a good football player.
And a lot of that, too, has to kind of do with what you think of Justin McCray is as well. Any bust-watch guys? I'll be frank. I haven't watched enough offensive tackle because I didn't view it as a big need for Green Bay. I didn't have to write anything about it. I don't have a guy that I've watched that I go, man, he is just – he's overvalued. I don't have that player this year. Jacob, do you have anybody that you've got that you're seeing and you just don't get it?
No, because like I mentioned to you earlier, I don't know – I mean, if you pick – you know, Connor Williams in the top five, like if some team does that, then yeah, then that's possible. But I just don't know. I mentioned, you know, I don't know where the top tackles are going to go because, like, I think I did one installment of a mock draft. I think I got to the middle of the first round before I was like, oh, there could be a spot for, yeah, Mike McGlinchey or a tackle like Connor Williams or somebody like that. So I don't have a whole lot of bust watch just because – a guy might flame out, but like if one of your fifth round picks flames out, then you know what's the big deal? And I think that Williams and McGlinchey being your top two tackles, they're going to be good enough to justify wherever they end up drafted, so long as it's not a top 5 to 10 selection. So I don't have anybody in particular.
Cody, anybody on bust watch tackle for you?
Yeah, definitely. These are kind of like polar opposites, right? So Orlando Brown from Oklahoma. Has pretty good college tape. He's just a mountain of a man. Went into the combine and just bombed it. Just almost like he didn't even prepare for it. It doesn't erase all the bad tape, but, man, it sure gives you pause on whether or not, you know, that's your job interview. You went and bombed your job interview. It's tough to kind of come back from that. So I think, his stock kind of leveled off after that. There's a lot of first-round buzz about him, one of the in contention for top tackle, and things certainly cooled down on him to where now he's a day two, possibly even day three guy. The other guy I worry about is Colton Miller from UCLA. And whereas you look at his tape, and he has major holes in this game, both with speed rushing, people crossing his face, and even developing more sand in his pants, you know, in anchoring down. But then he just tested, you know, out of this world at the combine, kind of like, you know, even better than Jason Spriggs. And those coincidentally have those two guys kind of have the same issues. So I worry if a team just kind of falls in love with Colton Miller's athleticism and reaches and takes him, you know, early day two or even late day one or something. I think that's just going to be too high for a guy of his caliber.
Well, we won't talk about the top guy at guard. That's obvious. It's Quentin Nelson. He's probably the best guard prospect in a decade. A guy that's not going to last to Green Bay's pick, and a guy that Green Bay is not going to go up and get. I cannot possibly imagine. I could, if he's there at 14, I could see them taking him, because then you just plug him in at right guard and you forget about it. You know, most people basically project him as an all-pro. So it just matters how you do or don't value the guard position. But going up to get him, I don't think is a possibility. I would be very surprised if we end up living in a world where Quentin Nelson is a Green Bay Packer. So we won't have a huge discussion about that, but guard is a spot that the Packers need. They need a right guard, and if you don't think Justin McCray can be that right guard, and you don't think they're going to re-sign Jari Evans, they got to figure something else out. I would put Kyle Murphy there and not worry about it even for a second, but I'm not in charge of anything at 1265 Lambeau, or excuse me, 1265 Lombardi, and you all should thank your lucky stars that that is the case. So let's talk a little bit about your favorite guys that you would like to see end up with Green Bay. You know, you've talked about a few of them. You guys have certainly mentioned what the Packers generally like to do, guys that you like, where the Packers would take a tackle and make him a guard, and that is generally, you know, what they would do, they being the Packers, I think. This staff, this front office, is still an extension of the Ted Thompson regime, and I would expect the tackle the guard thing to continue, but you never know. You never know if this group sees a guy like Lane Taylor, who was never a tackle, never even considered to be a tackle, a guy that brought in as an undrafted free agent and really earned his spot with the Packers and earned a nice little extension. So do they see that and go after a guy like Will Hernandez or a guy like Braden Smith from Auburn or even Kyle Bosch from West Virginia, guys that are really actually guards? Do you guys have anybody? Jacob, you did interior offensive linemen. We can talk about centers too, but right now I think center is going to be something you would look at maybe around 6 or 7 or even, you know, as an undrafted free agent, priority free agent, because you're set there. You just signed Corey Lindsey to an extension. If you're acquiring a center, you are acquiring that center to be a backup and hopefully never have to play. Jacob, you had the interior of the offensive line. Go ahead and start.
Yeah, you're set at center. You have Corey Lindsley, and you have Lucas Patrick behind him, who's had some experience there. And he did pretty good in his little cameo last year against the Chicago Bears. A couple guys, actually, the first guy I mentioned is a center, but I believe he can play guard, is Billy Price out of Ohio State. The Buckeyes have done really well. The Packers have actually done really well with Buckeye offensive linemen. You mentioned Corey Lindsley as one of those guys. I think he could play guard. He's athletic. He plays in that spread system with Urban Meyer, but he's also capable of moving people. Urban Meyer's system, as much as I hate that team, they're fun to watch because it's a spread system, so you have to be athletic, but it's a power running game, so you have to be able to maul up front as well. So I think that the Buckeyes get out really well-rounded offensive linemen from that standpoint. You mentioned Will Hernandez. That's another guy. He blocked for one of the 10 greatest running backs of all time. So that's a good start there. But he's actually a good player. I think he's able to get to the second level. He's athletic enough to move around despite. He's a bigger guy, so he's got a lot of size. We've talked about Austin Corbett as a guy who can move inside. We talked about Isaiah Wynn that can do that and move inside. Those are some of the tackles that I think that they could potentially target in the middle rounds. Braden Smith's a guy. They've actually interviewed him. That's a guy they're interested in. I don't think that's surprising. He played left tackle in college. He's a big guy, too. He'd be a 6'6 guard if that were direction that they would like to go. But I think this is a pretty good interior offensive line class. It's interesting to pay attention to as the process has been played out and stuff like that. So there's a lot of good players. Quentin Nelson is obviously a generational guard prospect. That makes the class look really, really good, which is helpful. But there's guys behind him. You won't have to spend a huge pick on him. One other guy that I think, I believe he's being mocked like end of the first round to the Minnesota Vikings. That's James Daniels. Again, a Iowa Hawkeye, well-coached, good run blocker, athletic enough to get to the second level, and I think he can have a lot of upside as a pass blocker. So there's a lot of guys in this class that I like at guard, as you can see that. And then, yeah, a couple centers that I think can also play guard.
Cody, some of your
Jacob,
favorite...
save me a couple guys, huh?
Sorry, man. I told you I did a bunch.
No, that's good. Actually, I got two guys I really like that you didn't mention. Thankfully, Frank Ragnow from Arkansas. No, he's center, but much like with the way Quentin Nelson, he's a big guard, big interior lineman. And some teams have inquired about asking if he could kick outside to tackle, which would be complete reversal of what Packers have typically done, but he had 35-inch long arms, too. I know that. I remember studying up on him before a game, and one of the team captains, really well-respected, Bielma speaks glowingly of him, and for as much as we all like to make fun of Bielma, there's a couple things he knows, and one of them is his offensive lineman. So I like him as an option. He's probably a late day two, early day three guy, and I think you could just kind of find his best home in the NFL. Whether that's plug and play at right guard, backup center, or if you do try to give him some reps at tackle, that'd be perfectly fine too. He'd be a good guy just to have on the team, kind of like a J.C. Treader almost. The other guy that I really like, and this is more of a sleeper favorite prospect, is Colby Gossett from Appalachian State. Again, he's primarily right guard. Started 40 some games for the Appalachian. A mauler in the run game, can get out and cut block really well at the second level, pulls extremely well, light on his feet, tested pretty good at the combine. If for whatever reason that Gutekunst goes off course and doesn't take a tackle to convert, I would like to target Gossett somewhere on day three and have him compete for a starting guard spot.
And I'm not really worried about bust watch. I don't think Green Bay, their history of trying to acquire guards, this particular guard class, and their current need at the guard position is really going to put them in bust danger at the guard position. So we won't talk about that. What we will do, though, is thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. Subscribe to the Packers Talk Network. Leave a rating. We like the ones with 5 stars. And feel free to leave a comment as well. Purchase the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide. Up until April 7th, you will still get it. For the pre-order price of $6.99, I am telling you right now, this is a newsstand quality draft guide. It is done by incredibly talented people, and when I say that, I mean people more talented than myself. There are 3, I believe, feature articles. I do a position analysis, or basically a roster breakdown. There's a first-round mock draft. There's a Packers mock draft, and every single position, and I mean everyone basically besides long snapper, gets a full breakdown, gets ranked 1 through 20, if not even further than that. So if you are going to sit down and watch the draft on April 26th, 27th, 28th, and you're a Packers fan, it's a must-have. If you're not, what the hell are you doing listening to the show? But at the same time, it's also got information that's going to apply to your team as well, especially if you run similar stuff that Green Bay runs. That'll do it for this episode, though, of the War Room Podcast. Thank you guys one more time for listening, and go Pack Go!